This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
Sometimes the safest place is the most dangerous. You're tuned in to Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi, featuring psychotherapist and author Siobhan Scott.
Thanks for joining us today. We are delving into a compelling and complex issue at the intersection of family dynamics, social media, and child welfare. Sparked by Sherry Frankie, the eldest daughter of former family vlogger Ruby Frankie, has recently published the memoir titled The House of My Mother, A Daughter's Quest for Freedom, in which she exposes the hidden abuse she and her siblings suffered behind the facade of their popular YouTube channel, Eight Passengers. This revelation has ignited a broader conversation about the ethics and psychological impacts of parents featuring their children in monetized social media content. Is this a practice? Harmless sharing family moments, or does it veer into exploitation and narcissism? Moreover, the response to such concerns, new legislation is being proposed to protect minors in the digital space. To explore these issues, we're joined by psychotherapist Siobhan Scott. Siobhan, given your expertise in family therapy, child psychology, and whatnot, what are the potential psychological impacts on children who are prominently featured in their parents' social media platforms?
Yeah, exploitation of kids is just a horrible thing. And one of the terms I always go back to is developmental disruption, when you do weird things when you're raising your kids. And this can cause boundary problems in the kids. They feel like they're on display, they have no right to privacy, and they end up not knowing who they are when the cameras aren't on. There's a risk that they're going to develop narcissism or develop a very real sense of shame about themselves that affects their personality, because they've been exposed online in all kinds of situations that should be private. Do they get teased in school? I mean, are they sexualized by child predators who watch them? It's just, it's really dirty. It's just, I think, a form of child abuse.
But mom's making money. That's the argument that, yeah, it's supporting our family. So it's a trade-off. It's worth it because we can now live this lifestyle that we never could before, because we're putting ourselves out there. Look, we have all these fans. They love us. Obviously, Ruby Frankie was doing some pretty horrible things to their kids. But what about those situations where, you know, they're not necessarily, you know, starving their children and, you know, wrapping them in duct tape?
Yeah, you're still disrupting what should be a normal time of life with the boundary problems, the lack of privacy, the fact that you may be turning your kids into narcissists, you know, or they may think growing up as teenagers, hey, I just want an OnlyFans account to support myself in life. You know, you're teaching them a very strange way of earning money and getting through the world that doesn't actually develop their potential, you know, to be productive in the world and to have a sense of identity.
Is it a strange way of earning money now? I get 10 years ago. I mean, YouTube was kind of new, but that's kind of when a lot of these things started up. You go before that, this didn't exist. It wasn't a thing unless you were literally on TLC with a television show like the Duggars or something like that. Mm-hmm. Now, anybody who really has a camera and some free time could start doing this. So I have to ask, because I know it is a seemingly strange to us because we've lived in a world that did not exist with this sort of thing. But you have kids growing up now where this is the norm, and they're doing it themselves. They're putting themselves out there in all sorts of ways, you know, good and bad. Unfortunately, a lot more bad, because when you're young, you make bad choices.
Exactly.
And that is, I think, the crux of this. To me, I think being almost a brand unto yourself now and making a living at it is, I mean, it already has become a lot more of a normal thing, but I think we're going to see it even wider spread unless for some reason there's some epiphany and people stop caring about voyeuristic you know, living in other people's lives, which I don't know you're going to change, you know, the DNA of people to do that. So is it so abnormal, or is this something that is going to be a piece of life going forward, and we need to find more rules, more regulations, more ways of doing this healthily? Because you can have all the rules in the world on this, but people are going to do what they're going to do.
Yeah, I think we do need rules about YouTube and people sharing video and extensive exploitation of children for money. I think they're neat. There are all kinds of ways that you can have a YouTube channel. My, you know, I've got one about therapy topics. My husband has one about technology. We don't make any money from those things, but you know, you feel like you're putting out important or valuable information. That's a service. It's a good thing to do.
Sure.
But for people who are trying to acquire thousands, millions of followers and use their children, I think we need rules about that, because it is harming the kids. And it, you know, we see so much of an increase, what appears to be an increase in narcissism, and so many stressed kids because of the things that are happening online, you know, or the things that they're sharing that get exposed, all the sexting. And as you say, they've got terrible impulse control. You know, it's like technology has moved faster than the safeguards have. And I think we need to be analyzing all that. We're really very aware. There's a lot of research out now about the trouble kids are getting into with just use of smartphones and, accessing the internet 24/7, and the problems with addiction to it, and, you know, sexting and predators. And, you know, we don't have enough guardrails in right now. And I think it's something that we try to educate parents about, how to be observant. But for the parents who are actively using the technology to exploit their kids and make a buck, you know, we need rules against that.
How do you educate parents on this effectively when, I mean, you're talking about, you know, a deeper thought, not really, but to some, yes, this thought of, okay, cause and effect, and down the road, the effects that it's going to have on your children, when you have parents that, you know, seem to have difficulty knowing that they should feed their children breakfast.
Right.
It's like, we can't get quite to that level on a good chunk of our population. How on earth are we going to handle this sort of a concept, where you actually have to use your mind a little bit and think, okay, this might not be good for the kids down the road. Can we ever get there? I mean, what sort of things have come to your mind on this topic of what could be put into place? Because I don't know that there really is.
It's a real battle. And, you know, I think I just had a parent ask me last week. He's got a one-year-old, and he was asking me about how much screen time she should have.
I'm for a one-year-old?
A one-year-old, and they're already trying to give her the iPad to keep her busy, you know? And I'm like, no screen time. I mean, the American Academy of Pediatrics said they should not be looking at screens before age two, and then it needs to be really limited. So we are changing brains with the exposure to technology at earlier and earlier ages, and technology that's meant to engage kids. It gets them addicted. And so I wrote a book about that back in 2009. It's gotten worse since then. You know, you can feel like you're shouting into the wilderness and nobody's hearing. But I know there are parents who do pay attention and, do listen. And I know people that even on like Facebook, they don't share hardly any, if any, photos of their kids because they're worried about child predators, and pedophiles do take images off the internet of children that they find attractive. And so I know that there are parents who pay attention and who listen, but yeah, not enough. And we need to keep talking about it.
Tell me about the book a little bit more. I know it's back in 2009. When you look back on this now, and the amount of things that have changed since 2009, what stands out to you as being even more uber threats and issues than they were back when you wrote the book?
Yeah, the book was really focused on electronic gaming and, and gaming addiction. The World of Warcraft phenomena had come out, and I was getting people in therapy who were kicked out of college because they couldn't stop video gaming. And there was there's a lot of psychology around why that was, and so we really explored that in the book. But since then, the thing that's become so much worse is kids and smartphones, because they literally have them 24/7 and kids are not sleeping. They're getting into really scary content. They're talking with predators. They're sexting. And this has just amplified. There are a lot of people writing books about that now. Jonathan Haidt, a sociologist, has written a very good book about it. I can't remember the name, but it's H-A-I-D-T. And, you know, it's something I think I feel overwhelmed. Can we rein it in? Because it is seductive for parents, because it keeps the kids busy. It gets them out of their hair, which reduces conversation. It reduces activities in the real world. It reduces connectivity, changes human relationships. And bottom line, we're changing brains.
Yeah.
And, you know, I see the change in particularly young men who have become addicted to use of internet pornography. They're using it for hours and hours and hours and hours, to the point that they're skipping work or skipping school or, you know, people are getting into trouble with this. And we don't do enough to educate young people, to educate parents, and to try to put some kind of guardrails in.
Can you educate people, though? Can you educate everybody on this? Can you educate the ones who are literally... this is changing their life, not for the better, where they didn't have the wherewithal to go, this is kind of destroying my life. I mean, it's kind of an obvious thing. I mean, I guess you could say that about, you know, alcohol or drugs or something like that too, but this is just kind of, it's another addiction, and it feeds, I guess, the same part of the brain. So is that why one could look at this and go, just stop doing that? Why are you doing this?
Yeah.
Is it because it is that much of an addiction, and our brains are not advanced enough to really understand that we can, what's going on around them, the fact that we can be, you know, sexually stimulated in any way you want in 3 seconds with a couple clicks, or whatever you want to see or whatever you want to do, it is there. Is there any coming back from this? I mean, is there a turnaround on this? Because I feel like voices like yours and mine and how we feel about this going, this is not going to be good down the road.
Yeah.
You know, we're out there, but the ones that are coming up, not so much feeling that way, because it has been such a norm for them for most of their lives. And I mean, this is how you see, you know, 18-year-old girls going out there going, I'm going to make tons of money taking off my clothes and having sex for people. Where, I mean, 10 years ago, any young girl would not be, they'd be like, what the hell? Like, it wouldn't be something that they would even consider or think as an option for making money, or something that they would explore, unless you want to go be a stripper. It was usually like, you know, people who were really hard up or a horrible situation or abused. That's not the case anymore.
Yeah, it's the norm now. It's accepted in some circles. And I confess, it feels like an overwhelming battle, you know, trying to bail the ocean with a teaspoon at times. And I don't hold a lot of hope. I will say a lot of people, including young men, come to therapy. I see them who are saying, I got in trouble with this. I want to stop the internet porn. I want to cut way back. It's out of control. And, you know, we celebrate those things. And so they are motivated. But it's usually after they've really screwed up their lives and their relationships. Mm-hmm. And of course, the ones that come to therapy for help, that's probably a tiny, tiny minority of the people who are having trouble.
What about for the women who are getting into like the OnlyFans and things like that, that are out there after some time and trying to be in a relationship, a safe, secure relationship with a partner? How damaging has that been? Because I would imagine, you know, it's the same thing. You're getting the hit of, oh gosh, like these people love me and they're adoring my body and this and that. Yeah. And it's a false sense of adoration, because it's so fleeting and it's strictly for some idiot's purpose of, you know, doing his thing while looking at you. That I would imagine would screw with the dynamics of how to be in a relationship and get normal recognition and the positivity back and forth, because a human cannot compete with like, money, 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 take off your clothes, take off your clothes. It's, it's got to really mess with, especially someone at that age whose brain is still very much developing. And this is what they're thinking is normal and healthy. And then eventually, I'm imagining they're going to end up finding themselves being kind of undateable or marriage material for anybody that's happy and healthy. It just kind of puts you into the other rung of, I guess, the porn addicts or really other unhealthy people.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because they do get addicted to the attention. And it's not attention that, like, you're getting attention for, oh, you created something beautiful in the world, you're an artist, or, you know, you're a scientist, you're doing something productive. You're getting attention for your body. And people become, again, the term developmentally disrupted. They don't develop other parts of themselves because they're addicted to that one thing. And yes, the sense of I am only valued when I'm on display, that feeds, again, this perverse sort of narcissism that we see. People who just don't develop into the person they could have been if they were more balanced in the way that they move through life.
And one of those things, I mean, once you have, you know, kind of, you've grown and you've transferred into adulthood and you have narcissism going on, that's one that really doesn't turn around. It's kind of like, this is in you, and the rest of your life you're going to be like that. And for those of us who've dealt with them, they're scary. They're scary, weird folks that you don't want to be around, because they're toxic. They're nothing but wrong. They're a menace to society, I will say, in some cases, or a menace to anyone around them with that way of thinking. And it's all being implemented in such important developmental years. If you get there, it's not a lot of turning back, or even having the wherewithal to know you should turn back or develop in a different way and understand there are healthy ways of feeling good about yourself other than that.
Yeah, very true. Very true. And it's this need for adoration and constant attention. I know people who are in their 80s who still function in life that way. And you're right, it impairs their ability to have healthy relationships with partners. If they have children, they damage their kids. And it's just really a sad thing.
Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
You're in the thick of a true crime saga, every detail sinking in, and then, wham, a commercial about something you couldn't care less about. It's like being served a microwaved dinner at a five-star restaurant. But it doesn't have to be this way. Go for True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts. With True Crime Today Premium Plus, you get uninterrupted, ad-free episodes, extended interviews that dig even deeper into the muck, and early access so you can brag to your friends. It's like ordering the secret menu at a crime buffet. So, search for True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and savor every twisted detail without interruption.